Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 47, episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For Friday, September 7th, 2018, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. SpaghettiOs Brian. And that one was courtesy of @MusicCityFC on Twitter, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Oh, yes, and I'm gonna keep it short today, a.k.a. Marco Dubio, because, you know, I stay with the loud, and that one comes to us from Holiest of Rollers at Will Pool for You.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by one of my favorite comedians and funniest people in the world for many years. He's got a new Netflix special, season 2 of The Lineup.
Yeah.
Please welcome Mr. Max Silvestri.
Thanks for having me here, guys. Yeah, hey. Thanks for saying that I was one of the funniest people, or one of the funniest people for years. Like,
yes.
That, the idea that, like, I had the title briefly.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would admit that I don't have
it
anymore.
No, no. Yeah. You're...
I had a run in my late 20s.
Once
it's gone.
And future, but just not right now, because you're on our show.
Exactly.
Yeah, once Vine came out, his reign ended.
That's right. That's
I couldn't be that brief.
Yeah. When all my... favorite comedians.
Then all my comedians showed up.
All right, Max, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. But first, we're going to tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about. We are, of course, going to be talking about the Kavanaugh hearings and the Democrats potentially growing some balls, maybe?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
You know, they're doing something.
It's been...
better late than never, I guess.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, the game of Clue that has spawned. I'm going to talk a little bit about the normalization that's going on. Trump basically telling Sessions to leave his friends alone and prosecute his enemies, and just how bonkers that would be in any other setting, or mm-hmm. if we hadn't just lived through the past 2 years. It's basically worse than anything on the Nixon tapes. We're going to talk about how Qatar is trying to get to that addled megalomaniac who runs our country, India striking down their anti-sodomy laws, and how to tell if your neighborhood is about to be gentrified. But first, Max, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
So this is last night. I was trying, basically, it's Highlander Black Immortals.
Okay.
A friend was like, that show Highlander, they were all white, right? And I was like, no, the Highlander was Scottish. He was very white in all its incarnations.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there were immortals of all races, and I needed to confirm that. And then he was like, and they used a katana, and I was like, I had to Google Duncan MacLeod's sword to confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, he used a katana, but really any way you can cut off a Highlander's head is
right.
An immortal's head will work. So some had broadswords, some used, like, chains or things. You know, they kind of mixed it up as the TV show got deep. And then finally, Wagville webcam, which is, I was on vacation, and I wanted to see... my dog.
What's a Wagville webcam?
Wagville is a dog boarding place in
Los
Angeles, and they have a webcam where you can watch a lot of dogs in low resolution and just be like, oh, there she is. Look at her. She's missing us. Nope, that's not her. Actually, nope, sorry. That's a bigger dog. I think that's, oh, look at her tail. Her weird tail. Nope. Also, not her. Oh, that one's shitting. That one's shitting. Where I fell asleep.
I feel like one time I had to board my dog, or we tried to, but some of the reviews of these places were so bad. But
yeah.
I also don't know if it's also because people are very protective of their pets. So
yes.
If anything goes wrong, they're like, it's basically an enslavement camp for pets.
Right.
And they beat them.
Yeah.
When it's just like, you didn't put on the gravy packet that I do every night. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was weird because...
she needs to eat at 5, not 5:15.
Yeah, no, exactly.
She's going to lose her mind.
And then, yeah, and then I see like ones that it's like, well, they have a webcam. You can see everything. So Wagville is saying they treat the dog right?
I think because I have that attitude towards... my dog, I've never read a Yelp review of one. It's always been just like someone been like, no, they're good there. And it's like, well, you didn't sleep over. You didn't look in through the window.
Right.
Your just dog came back not dead or whatever.
Right.
So I don't know anyone whose dog has died at Wagville.
Yeah.
My dog has came back alive every time.
Nice.
A little mangy, a little frightened. She sleeps for 24 hours, but we call it camp. It's like you must be having so much fun with these 75 new friends that scream at you the entire night.
Yeah, I feel like dogs always sleep so much after they come back from something.
Oh my God, just so exhausted.
Traumatic, Jack. Don't people's dogs die at that shit? Don't people always have horror stories like, oh, my dog died at a boarding place? Maybe they're old.
I don't know if they always do.
Yeah. My cat died.
Everyone's got those stories. You know, we all have those stories. How many dogs have you had die?
But imagine if you went to a summer camp camp and like some of the kids were seven times the size of you, it would be pretty terrifying.
And there was a sign up that was like, a kid hasn't died here in like 58 days or whatever. Like one of those number things they change. Right. Yeah. It's like, why would you put that right up on front? You're reminding people that kids could die.
We're also reminding you how well we've done.
Yeah,
for
right. Come on. That's almost 2 months.
Give us some credit.
Counting February.
What is something you think is overrated, Max?
Soup for dinner. I think soup pho, I think ramen, I think in general, hot broths with limited protein is just an overrated thing.
Okay.
I get that people like it. I get that people line up for ramen that like, especially in colder climates, like pho and such a, you know, like it's my girlfriend's favorite food. And I'm just like, I don't want to eat soup for dinner.
Hot soup for dinner.
Yeah. You know, like I would eat some soup, but then like I want to eat the real thing. Like I don't want to slurp up this, you know.
It's a course, not the whole meal.
Exactly. I'm a big course guy. I do five courses. I'll do like thin kind of consommé to start. And then, you know, some sort of terrine is usually how I start warming up my teeth. Yep. And then I'll, you know, do like a whole fish and then salad after because I'm very French
Euro.
In my... Yeah, exactly. It helps digestion.
A whole fish.
And then just assorted cheeses and chocolates for hours as I sip espresso.
Just a light meal.
Argue about trade.
Cheese plate and some port wine.
Exactly. And then, I just
so then what's a great meal then? Is it the fact that there's too much broth and you just feel like the noodles plus the toppings is just not hitting the spot?
Yeah. I mean, I like the flavor of them. I just feel like it's difficult to eat. Like it usually requires like multiple utensils or it's like, well, you get a little bit of broth with the spoon and then you got, you know, chopsticks or a fork to kind of get the heavier stuff. It just feels like a lot of work.
Mm. Yeah.
It feels like I'm helping cook it or whatever, you know? So I guess I just enjoy a drier.
A drier food.
Yeah.
A bouillon cube.
I'm like my dog, and then I prefer dry to wet food. I mean, maybe wet's a treat on my birthday, but you know I'm going to be shitting my brains out after that can of food.
What is something you think is underrated?
Well, this is related. I think hot dogs are underrated.
Okay.
I think hamburgers have gotten a lot of attention in the last handful of years of just like being this new elegant, you know, both like every restaurant has them, but also like Shake Shack and this idea of like, you know, a burger is worth exalting and just being and throwing barbecues in the last summer or two. Hot dogs, they hit the spot constantly.
They're and you can't fuck them up.
You can't, you know, like, I mean, I guess you can, even bad ones are good and they're smaller. Like, I like that I can just like throw a hot dog in the mix and it's not like, oh, I need to lay down, you know?
Right.
Like yeah,
a
that's
hot dog's
true.
Like a
it's
between.
An afterthought.
Very contained.
What does Taco Bell call it? Fourth meal?
Like,
hot dogs are like fourth meal. I love mustard. I love pickles, hot peppers, things that you can just throw on there. It's just like a delivery device for spicy vinegar. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you're outing yourself as a bit of a foodie here, I think.
I like to eat. Yeah, I have strong opinions about it. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like when I looked at, okay, what do I think? What do I have strong opinions about right now that don't depress me? I need the news. It
now,
was
do
hot
you
dogs
like,
and soup.
Do you like fancy sausages and that sort of thing, or you're just straight up?
Oh wow!
Frankfurt.
I mean, like I'll eat one, but I'm never gonna be like, oh, they've got this. Oh, it's like a apple and sage, and it's expensive. And I went to a butcher shop. I'm like, no, I want.
I
also like my hot dogs boiled. Like I like
steam.
I like the
New York City street style.
Exactly. Yeah. I put a little like toaster grate over the pan with the water and I steam the bun.
Wow.
So
holy
you get
shit.
That kind of spongy.
What are you having us over for some hot dogs?
For
have
my
you ever
sad
had a spiral,
meal.
Have you ever had a spiral cut hot dog?
No, what's a spiral
so
cut?
So I found you so you would put it take a hot dog and you put like a kebab stick or some or you know, any kind of stick through it so you can kind of cut it into a spiral so you create more surface area. So if you're grilling it, you can get more crispy surface on your hot dog.
So it's not just like a split once. It's like long.
Yeah, long. So it's like ribbon cut almost.
So it's like the fingernails of that guy in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Right, exactly.
Or whatever, the ones hanging over the stairs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then, mostly what we want our food to resemble.
Well, what you do, you render a bunch of bacon fat. Okay?
Oh, wow.
You put it, then you, in that bacon fat, you fucking fry up your spiral cut hot dog.
Oh,
and now you have some shit that will put you to sleep.
Oh, my God. That
my second
great.
Question is a hot dog a sandwich?
I personally think that no, it's not a sandwich.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I think the way in which it's, there's not a really good answer why.
Yeah, it's a
not,
tough question.
You know, but I think one has to draw a line somewhere. One has to have a code if you're arguing about, well, it's meat nestled in some sort of kind of, you know, hammock. Well, then now are we talking about, is a taco a sandwich? Is a, you know, gordita? Is a
hammock a bed?
Is a hammock
a
bed?
Wow.
Is it okay to be friends with those people that bring hammocks to public places and hang them up? Yeah. I say no.
No.
If they have a hot dog in there, I think you can be friends.
I think that's settled law, actually. And finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
A lot of people my age and like me live under the myth that Bosch is a bad show. They're just like, what is Bosch? Why is there just all these bus ads in LA for Bosch? Bosch is for dads. I don't know. This, it's like a guy who looks like my dad who seems like tired. What is this? But I'm here to say that Bosch is a fantastic show. I think it's one of the best police serialized procedures we have on TV. And it's the best depiction of LA.
Really?
Since the movie Heat. I'm going to say that.
Really?
That boldly, yes.
I always associated it with Monk for some reason.
You know, that I know exactly what you mean. It feels like one of those, like, kind of, like, not bad, but kind of disposable.
Right.
That, like, okay, you know, USA has that, like,
procedural.
Bright blue sky.
Right.
But no, it tells serialized long stories about, like, crimes in LA. And it's the guy whose books they're based on. I mean, he was, like, a crime reporter for many years and, like, they like live and breathe LA. Like, I mean, a lot of the show was like, let's meet up at this LA restaurant.
Right, right.
And then it's shot at that LA restaurant. And then like he talks about traffic a lot. But right. I mean, it really, but it's filmed beautifully in like 4K. And it just, it feels more like LA than anything else.
Right.
It really embraces its LA-ness of like, oh, I got to go over to Mulholland right now. Okay, well, why don't you meet me here at like El Compadre? And then we'll have a flaming margarita.
Woo.
And like, it's great. So it's, I think it's a fantastic show.
Margaritas are dangerous.
And they don't show him sitting in traffic, just complaining about it after the fact.
On the show, they don't. In the books, you'll get a straight paragraph. The books are really written with like the day-to-day of like what a cop's life is like. Of like, well, I got to check this and this. So he's like, so he took the 405 and tried to beat the rush hour traffic back,
nice.
But he's going the other direction. And then he took, you know, Wilshire all the way down. Like the books will fully describe MapQuest printed out directions from the 90s.
So if you're from LA, it'll probably just stress you out. You're like, no, bro, I wouldn't do that, actually.
Oh, no.
But then you read the older books, and you're like, oh, man, Pico used to be so fast. Oh,
right,
he lives
right,
in a different
right.
time, you know.
Right.
Who was the last guest that was extolling the virtues of
Bosch? I forget. I was just trying to figure out if that was on our show.
It was,
or in my life.
And they were shouting out the author, too, because the books they really liked.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
The books
Andy.
Are great as well.
It was
yeah.
Andy.
It was Andy
from
Beckerman?
Couples Therapy. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him in a couple weeks. That sounds like we have an appointment to fight or something. But
over this.
Yeah, over this. No, they really, I got into the TV show first, but was so into it. And so.
Oh, you just said, for the record, you got into the TV show before Andy.
No,
first.
No. Before the books.
Oh, okay.
But
right.
then
right.
I became, you know, so starved.
Right,
they're the
right.
only show, and I watch a lot of TV and like serialized stuff. They're the only show I like binge the first 2 days they're out. Like I'm done.
Right.
Oh, wow.
But I was so desperate for more Bosch content
Shit.
That I've started reading the books
and you
from
watch
the beginning.
They're Netflix, Amazon?
Amazon Prime. And
Amazon
wow,
Prime.
A lot of people spending near billions of dollars for you to know that fact. And you
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah.
You know,
we
so,
didn't know.
Shame on them. Yeah, yeah. More bus ads. More
there
Bosch ads.
Go.
Also, my dishwasher is Bosch. So, you know, I feel like a certain, like, keep
yeah.
it in the home.
And their pears are good, too, right?
yeah.
He's literally named after his, he goes by Harry, but his name, the character name is Hieronymus Bosch.
Oh, really?
Like, just like the artist. Like, not
nice.
Like. Bosch is a nod. He's just like, no, my mother named me Hieronymus Bosch. he has a print of the painting. It's
That's
like a
great.
Real ham-fisted metaphor about, I don't know, punishment or justice.
Right. All right, let's get into the events that are taking place right now. So the Kavanaugh hearing is ongoing, and it got very contentious, I guess would be one way of putting it.
Yeah, Wednesday night was spicy night.
Yeah, and then his interaction with Kamala Harris felt a little like the conversation between Jules and Brett at the beginning of Pulp Fiction. Where
yeah.
The check out the big brain on Brett.
Or is it Brad?
Brad.
Yeah.
Sorry. They're so
English
similar.
Motherfucker, do you speak
yes.
it? Yes. He got fucking grilled. And again, we've seen something throughout this entire hearing that clearly there are a lot of documents that haven't been made public because they probably show Brett Kavanaugh's capacity to lie to the Senate or lie to other people or just do just
or
generally
under oath.
Yeah, just do generally underhanded shit to get whatever needs to just to get shit done, which isn't new. But again, if you're trying to put someone as to be a lifetime appointee or a lifetime position in the Supreme Court, these are things we should know. So, yes, this is from Wednesday night when Kamala Harris was basically insinuating that she knows something that we don't know. And
he seemed to know it as well in a really funny way. He was like, oh, please.
Yeah. So
you know about it. Can you just tell me what you're.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Just listen to this quick little exchange and tell me if it gives you the tingles. The law firm witness.
Have you ever discussed Special Counsel Mueller or his investigation with anyone?
Well, it's in the news every day.
Have you discussed it with anyone?
With other judges, I know.
Have you discussed Mueller or his investigation with anyone at Cassowitz, Benson, and Torres, the law firm founded by Mark Cassowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer? Be sure about your answer, sir.
Well, I'm not remembering, but if you have something you want to...
Are you certain you've not had a conversation with anyone at that law firm?
Cassowitz, Benson.
Cassowitz, really? Benson, and yeah. Torres, which is the law firm founded by Mark Cassowitz,
yeah.
who is President Trump's personal lawyer. Have you had any conversation about Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that firm? Yes or no?
Well, is there a person you're talking about?
I'm asking you a very direct question, yes or no.
I need to know the... I'm not sure I know everyone who works at that law firm.
I don't think you need to. I think you need to know who you talked with. Who'd you talk to?
I don't think I'm not remembering, but I'm happy to... be refreshed, or if you want to tell me who you're thinking
about,
it works.
Are you saying that with all that you remember, you have an impeccable memory? You've been speaking for almost 8 hours, I think more, with this committee about all sorts of things you remember. Yeah. How can you not remember whether or not you had a conversation about Robert Mueller or his investigation with anyone at that law firm? This investigation has only been going on for so long, sir. So
right,
please
I'm not
answer
sure
the question.
I'm just trying to think, do I know anyone who works at that firm? I might know.
That's not my question. My question is, have you had a conversation with anyone at that firm about that investigation?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really specific question.
I would like to know the person you're thinking of.
See,
I want to know what you know.
Yeah, my goodness. And he's doing that thing where she clearly is holding an email, probably looking at it right now, where there's a conversation happening or evidence of a conversation between him and someone at Kazowitz's law firm. And he's trying to be like, well, why don't you say the thing that's confidential that I know you can't say.
Right.
And it's like,
people were, I watched that clip this morning and people were like, oh man, she ripped him apart. Like, what a embarrassing, like, squirmy thing. To me, I was like, well, she's just saying the name of the law firm. And like those big law firms, there's probably like 900 named, 900
like
partners.
700 people that work
right,
for
and
that
200
one.
Partners. So like the idea that like, she knows about him being, in a room or like, or over email having like a conversation he shouldn't be having with
right.
like clearly he has done it, but he's just like, I just don't know if it was someone from that law firm. Like,
yeah.
I've done a lot of bad things. I'm just trying to track.
Well, so what's the significance of that law firm?
Well, it's Mark Cassowitz's law firm, who's Trump's attorney.
So
clearly it's like, well, were they discussing something about like, hey, if you were to become Supreme Court justice, how do you think you would rule on this? Or in your position as a judge, how do you see this? Like, what's the legal maneuvering we could do to help the president? Now, we don't know if that's what the substance of their conversation is. But to your point, Max, the Cassowitz, Benson, Torres, they have 350 lawyers at all locations. But their D.C. office is a block from the White House. And that D.C. office only has 7 lawyers. Mm. So it probably makes sense for someone who is in the Beltway, that area, doing business or having conversations with people at the law firm. It's probably one of 7 people.
Right.
And then Mike Lee from Utah came in and be like, oh, there's so many lawyers all over the earth that how could he possibly.
Lawyers don't wear a badge.
Right.
They should. And that's another thing I'd like to bring up.
Right.
Lawyers should wear badges.
It was one of those moments, too, where this happened even yesterday with, Cory Booker. Talking about, I have an email about racial profiling, I think, that we need to discuss. And there's a lot of these things that are being obscured by the Republicans on this Senate Judiciary Committee that we're just kind of not getting our answers to. And that's why people like Cory Booker, they leaked stuff.
Right. Well, there's all these documents that are, they're calling committee confidential documents that I just assumed, because everyone was referring to them by that term, that that was just a thing that always happens with Supreme Court nominees, but it's not.
No, this is unprecedented.
Yeah, this is unprecedented. They just released a bunch of documents to the senators, but wouldn't let the public see them. And the only time they would do that typically is if there was like national security issues at stake. But yeah, that's not the case here. It's just basically like
emails.
This is going to look really bad.
Yeah. So. Or give proof that you did lie to the Senate before years past. And, you know, again, this is why it's become so underhanded. Now, that's why we're thinking, oh, wow, Booker is out here saying, like, I don't care if I have to leave the Senate. Like, I'm going to fucking drop these emails out of nowhere because the people deserve to know. Now,
what a way to announce a presidential run. 100% to be kicked out of the Senate by the Republicans. Oh my God.
So I need to be president. Yeah. But I think it is important too, because even Senator Hirono from Hawaii also tweeted some confidential stuff too, or committee confidential. And then, you know, Kamala Harris also, again, she had another really great line of questioning to Brett Kavanaugh too, because they moved on to talk about Roe v. Wade. And this was just a very simple exchange, just to kind of, you know, understand that how many laws are there that actually govern the male body?
Can you think of any laws that give government the power to make decisions about the male body?
Wait, is the tape broken? Or?
No, that's real.
Answer a more specific question.
More specific.
Male versus female.
There are medical procedures.
What?
That the government has the power to make a decision about a man's body?
I thought you were asking about medical procedures that are unique to men.
That's really what
I'll repeat the question. Can you think of any laws?
Like getting a gun surgically implanted into
the power to make decisions about the male body.
I heard about this one guy.
I'm not a
biohacker.
Thinking of any right now, Senator.
Yeah, okay. That was just another fun moment where, I mean, Kamala Harris also, she's also running too.
Yeah, so right. She's doing a really great job.
She is. Oh, I love it. I'm loving how, just because if you guys have to watch the video, you'll see that in the footnotes. But her face is so like, that's what you got. And there are a few moments that it reminded me of being like a teenager, where my mom would be like, "So did you smoke weed this weekend?" And I'm like, "What? No. What are you talking about?" So are you sure?
Did you find a joint or something?
Yeah, and then she's like, maybe what are these zigzags in your pocket? And I'm like, oh, shit. Oh. Like, for a second, I had that moment like, did I get away with it? Yeah. No, I didn't.
Nah.
But yeah, I mean, again, the fireworks are going off. And it shows you, too, because the protesters are not stopping. And you really understand that this is a really, really important moment, because now we have a person who is so clear. There's so many question marks around how fit they are to be a Supreme Court justice. And we're not really getting the entire picture of, like, who they are as a person. Keep in mind, too, he also said some shit. He's like, you know, I'm from, I think he made a statement about how he was from a city that was plagued by gun and gang and drug violence. He was raised in Bethesda, Maryland.
Oh,
and if you don't know much about the area, Bethesda, Maryland is not, you know, it's not the Baltimore Project.
It's a rich suburb of D.C., basically.
Yes. And the school that he went to, Georgetown Prep, has a fucking literal golf course on campus.
Right.
So I'm having trouble.
Wait, your high school didn't have a golf course?
Fuck no.
Bethesda maybe is in firing range of Baltimore. Like if you were to shoot a rifle into the air at a specific parabola. Yeah, it would land.
Parabolically, of course, you would hear about violence. Right. But I wouldn't say Bethesda, Maryland is plagued by that. Right. Also, shout out to Bethesda Bagels out there. Love your whitefish salad.
Yeah. No,
it's about whitefish.
Great part of the country. There's nothing wrong.
But it shows you how this man is willing to obscure facts to either make himself look like he's more in touch with the realities of today or whatever, or his constant harping about being a basketball coach.
Yeah, that is still an open offer.
Yes.
We will play two on two. If he's such a good basketball coach, two on two, game to 11, ones and twos, or he can pick any of the girls from his fourth grade basketball team.
I'll play two
he
on five.
He's such a
two on five. Two
how
on
many
five.
Points will you give up?
Yeah, how about this? We'll play to 15. They have 10 points already.
Okay.
2-on-5, 8-foot rims.
Yeah.
8-foot rims.
Oh, wow. I'm fucking smashing. I'm going to fucking tomahawk on all these kids.
I got beaten at wiffle ball by like 6-year-olds this weekend. So
wiffle ball is tricky, though.
Man. No, I'm not going to talk shit about wiffle ball. It's tough.
I tried bringing power to a finesse game, and I got it handed to me for exactly that reason.
Have you seen YouTube videos of people doing like the sneakiest wiffle ball pitches? Oh my God, because that ball
they just
moves.
Move, yeah.
It's wild how they're like professional wiffle ball pitchers, and they're moving in ways you're like, I can't. No one can.
It's like one of those
that.
Hot dogs. It's like the spiral.
It's just all flapping.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the protesters, speaking of the protesters earlier, it seems like they got lessons on like projection
towards the microphones.
Yeah, towards the microphone, because now you can actually hear what they're saying.
Yeah, be a hero, vote no was one I heard a lot.
Yeah, they did a good job with that one. And a couple of other things. There's some documents being leaked today saying that seemed to indicate that he's perjured himself before under oath, Kavanaugh, having to do with his knowledge of the warrantless surveillance programs. He said he found out about them when the New York Times reported on them in 2005. And there is a 2001 email that he wrote to somebody about those. Are you just seeing Burt Reynolds?
Yeah, Burt Reynolds what? Dead?
Yeah, Burt Reynolds passed.
Shout out to Burt. Anyway.
I just bought his autobiography from a couple years ago.
Oh, really?
I haven't read it yet. I was very excited to.
Yeah.
And that's
he was 82. That's crazy. Well, shit.
I'm sorry to digress. Well, you know, the thing about Brett Kavanaugh, though, too, is he's been a life... He's a political operative with a law degree.
Right.
You know, so he's not one of these people who's, like, sitting in the ivory law tower just, you know, thinking about law all the time. He fucking works for the party. Right. He does what the party needs. And he's managed to make his way up to the point that now he can be considered for being a Supreme Court justice. So I don't think anything, you know, I think some people believe that, oh, well, you know, he might do right or whatever. But his record shows he does what needs to be done in the name of the party.
What do you guys
feel
about the idea that he's like the best we're going to get from like a Republican controlled White House?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think it's weird because if we lived in a... Again, I have to even like answer the question by like living in a time that we don't anymore.
Right.
Where when we used to, you would think that Merrick Garland would get a fucking hearing, because now we're just dealing with stolen Supreme Court justice appointments.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I guess, but I don't know. I think everything will feel like a violation.
Oh,
ever
for
since
sure.
That.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, Amy Coney Barrett. I don't know how much better that would have been. But I think it's just, it would have been easier, I think, for her to get confirmed because they don't have to hide. And I think that's what they were always saying. Like, McConnell was always being like, well, I think,
Kavanaugh
might be tough because he knew they would have to obscure a lot of shit.
All these
I guess like, I'm all for, like, stopping the hearings on account of, like, we have a president that's, like, facing imminent possible indictment.
Right.
And this is a specific constitutional crisis or whatnot. Like, we shouldn't be confirming one. And it feels like the Democrats are trying to make both arguments that, like, we shouldn't have this hearing right now for a handful of reasons, but also we're going to stop this justice from being confirmed on his own merits or lack of or whatever. And it feels like a complicated two-pronged.
Well, it's because they don't know which argument's going to work,
right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they can either shame Chuck Grassley constantly, and this is a fucking stain on whatever legacy he has left.
Right.
But, like, you know, they think, oh, maybe we can shame him into seeing the light. And the other one's like, well, this shouldn't be happening anyway. There's so many things wrong with it that, that's why I even have trouble articulating why this is such a bad thing. But, on the surface, you can't have someone who is clearly, with everything that's coming out, is unfit to be president, making decisions to, like, completely change the Supreme Court for a generation.
For a guy that is perhaps specifically on record has the opinion that sitting presidents can't be, indicted or whatever.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's... When McConnell said he has too much of a paper trail, Trump ignored that fact for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, of all of the extremely, extremely right-wing candidates, he was the one who was on record saying, like, I got you.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess, to answer your question, this is maybe the best Supreme Court justice that the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation could approve.
Right.
But I feel like if business were normal and we weren't just, like, insourcing that stuff to those interest groups.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
They could easily find someone who
I just
would
mean of the range of the people that would make us angry. That,
Right.
You know, they would pick.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and let's talk about the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times.
The what?
So, Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
Hey, have you guys seen this? You guys heard about this?
So a high-ranking White House official has taken the drastic step of, reporting that they are in a perpetual state of like a soft coup where they just protect us and the president from his worst inclinations, and that there were whispers of the 25th Amendment early on.
A soft coo is the sound that pigeons make.
Right, so, right? It is. Yeah. So very
exactly. It's just kind of nice and white noisy.
And so, I mean, this has kicked off a full-on game of Clue in the White House where people are like examining the language. The writer uses the word lodestar, which is kind of a weird and specific word that apparently Vice President Pence has used multiple times in the past, and he is probably the person who would have the most to gain if Trump left office. But
he's probably also used it most on speeches that were like spelled phonetically with pictograms or whatever written by someone else.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. But apparently lodestar is a piece of military terminology, so it could also be any of the hundreds of people who have military backgrounds.
Because the title senior that they use to describe a senior aide could just be like hundreds of people.
Yes.
So it's, I think it's a large group. Could be a nobody. It could be a somebody.
Right. And
the point is we should be very excited that unelected career bureaucrats, famously the chillest people, are shadow running the government.
Right. That's kind
of... Oh, you chose to move to D.C. at 21?
Right.
Awesome.
It seems like that's what they were expecting, or based... That seems to be how people took the intention of the op-ed, is that they just wanted credit for the fact that they are doing the right thing. I feel like there are plenty of cynical ways that this could be viewed, though, either, as somebody... First of all, like... planting words specifically to implicate other people.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
As like internal politics within the staff of Pence's speechwriter fired or whatever.
Right. And also, I mean, this is coming out. I mean, this was submitted last week, but it is hitting at the same time as the Woodward book, which, has a bunch of specific names talking shit about the president. So if you were behind one of those people, you had some sense that this book was coming out that was going to make somebody in front of you look bad, and then you planted an op-ed that seemed like it was could have been written by them or just to like further infuriate the president. That I don't know. It just seems weird that we're just kind of taking them at their word.
Cases. Like on one side, I know like a lot of liberal people were like, oh, that's fucking dope, man. Like I'm glad there are people trying to do it. On the other hand, too, you can look at it and be like, this is also kind of terrifying, too.
Do you know people that felt the former?
No, I think the initial reaction was sort of like, holy shit, man. Yeah, like fucking stop this guy or whatever. Because on the surface.
Shallow state.
Yeah, because on when you hear about military like generals being like, yeah, they told me to do something, but fuck that. I'm not going to do it. Which makes sense because they know when their military expertise, like to take orders from the president when he's saying like, yeah, let's just execute heads of state or whatever, or do things like that. That is completely bonkers shit. But at the same time, when you hear about like the military not taking orders from like the president, like that can slowly turn into some other kind of military coup problem. Yeah. But not that's really not sort of this is such a bizarre case because you have someone who is doing things that are completely out of the normal and completely divorced from the reality of the diplomatic situation or whatever the actual world situation is, that it's hard to sort of look at him and go like, oh, this is fucked up. It's kind of unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, that it seemed to be as much like, it'd be one thing if they were just like, we think this guy makes not sensible decisions that are uninformed, so we're doing our best to keep things level-headed because he's impetuous or whatever. But it seemed to be kind of shadow saying like, we believe this man has some form of dementia
problems,
or dissociative, like degenerative disease of the brain, but don't worry, we're going to like keep things running until he, his head explodes or he's indicted or someone else is elected. And it feels like that is actually specifically what the 25th Amendment is for.
Right.
Like rather than just being like, we disagree and he's a bad guy.
Right. Right.
He gets mad.
Yeah. I mean, Miles, you were saying kind of this could be viewed as a cry for help to Congress because they're just not doing their
job.
If
this is for real, right? Congress should be like, hold the fuck up. There are people in the cabinet or in the White House who are just out there being like, yo, this guy is wholly unfit. You would call them and be like, please tell us about what's going on at the White House.
Right.
Please tell me what you know, what you have seen, because as part of the Congress, we can check the presidential power. And if there, if this person is that unfit, we need to know so we can do what we can to whether impeach that or just figure out, bring to light what is actually going on. Right. But again, I don't think, I think the person who wrote this op-ed, like, who are the, if they really felt like this, who are they going to go to in Congress?
Right.
There's, especially before Kavanaugh is confirmed. I feel like whatever suddenly out of nowhere righteous action that might happen is not going to happen until they get their Supreme Court justice.
And there's so many Trump hacks in Congress that who do you know you can trust to tell that to, and they don't immediately go to the White House and be like, hey, this guy just said this shit. Yeah,
right.
You need to figure this out. But I think that could be the other thing too, because I think part of it was saying like the people need to come together too, and maybe that's us putting pressure on Congress now to like really look into this more. But with everything that we've read, and even just the last 3 days, like with the Woodward excerpts and now this, you think that Congress would be like, it sounds like this guy is really fucking up, as if we didn't know that already. Right. But now, like, how are they going to hide and completely abandon their responsibility to actually have any kind of power to look at the presidency and say like, okay, we need to look at this a little bit and figure out what to do.
There was a New York Times profile of Paul Ryan a couple weeks ago where he basically expressed a similar thing where he was thinking of himself as sort of the last line of defense, because he was saying, man, you guys have no idea how bad, like how many catastrophes I've averted.
Right.
Like essentially
it
like
it could have been way worse.
Right. Yeah. It could have been way worse. Like I'm here to prevent the president from ending the world. It seems like that's how everybody on all sides is thinking.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, maybe this person is just trying to bring it to a head in some way, because there's no way that they wrote this and thought Trump wouldn't have a reaction. Right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, so much of like, I feel like right-wing use of the media is like to communicate with or provoke him specifically in a way that you can't in a face-to-face meeting, but like headlines, and that is how you get to him. So it's like, what do they want out of him? You know, like, and him calling, like, is this treason, or like the New York Times, like, I'm going to demand them legally that they tell me? Or it's like, I don't know where that goes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, other people think maybe like if maybe it could be Don McGahn, because he has a knack for getting things out there. And this could also serve as a distraction from Kavanaugh's hearings, which aren't going that great.
Right.
And now everyone's going to be like, who's the op-ed?
Right.
Who is this op-ed? You know, like, and because, you know, Don McGahn is close friends with Brett Kavanaugh, that people have seen it as a distraction to that. People have seen it as a right-wing way of getting people to believe in this deep state conspiracy even more, that there is like this other government working against Trump too. But at the very least, we can see that the dysfunction has reached fever pitch.
Right.
But again, it's like one of those things, man. We've been knowing how bad this is and how awfully this administration's been running, that I guess maybe it's just to get Congress to run out of like rhetorical defenses of as to why they don't need to investigate the president or why they don't impeach him. Be like, I'm sorry, I have an op-ed. There's an op-ed from people in the White House saying like,
well, like, help,
this thing is melting down.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're still not going to do anything?
Right. But it seems, I mean, yeah, the New York Times credibility has been so well called into question in a, that sort of fake Trump actualized fake news way, that I feel like it's not very hard for them to just be like, you know, the New York Times refuses to say the name, we don't believe this is real.
Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 So, I mean, the idea of normalization could be raised in relation to basically every Trump story that we're talking about or have talked about in the past month on this podcast. But I was listening to this podcast, Rational Security, that's hosted by a bunch of, you know, professors and analysts and experts on national security, and who have worked their whole careers in the national security apparatus. And they were just marveling over the fact that Trump openly called for Sessions to stop going after people who are loyal to Trump and like pushing him to go after Democrats, because it's bad for the Republicans in the lead up to the midterms.
Right.
And they were just saying like, that's just textbook corruption.
Yeah.
That's like what, if this was on some secret tape of him telling his attorney general, stop going after my people, go after these other people because it's better for me personally, then it would be grounds for impeachment. But because he does it on Twitter, and we're so used to him just tweeting the wildest shit ever that, like, it just doesn't even register. Like, no, they were saying, like, nobody even wrote about the fact that he did that.
Right. Yeah, because it's just been like, oh, here he goes. Like, right. That's how everyone's taking, like, eh, baby's whining again.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's not like the president is trying to fucking melt down the republic.
The president profoundly doesn't understand how law or morality works.
Right.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Yeah, and, like, that's how we're approaching it. Yeah, it's true.
This dummy needs a nap.
Yeah, there's this article in the New York Review of Books. It was about global warming, but it was talking about the fact that I'll just read the quote. The great Dutch writer and historian Geert Mak once told me that in 1933, the Dutch newspapers were full of stories of the threat of Nazism. Yet by 1938, those same papers were all but silent on the subject. Sometimes it seems threats to our future become so great that we opt to ignore them. And also, I think it's like sometimes it's just you get tired of a story, or you just get used to the story, or like the temperature in the room gets heightened to a point that you don't even really notice when like a certain line is crossed.
Cooking lobsters in cold water, right?
Right, you know, exactly.
Just slowly turning it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why it's always frogs, they say.
Right. Yeah.
That's you don't eat frogs.
That's for
that
poor
way.
People.
Yeah, lobster is what you would cook that way.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think that's what also makes me think too, you know, like maybe the Republicans do know that the clock is ticking for Trump, and they do know that something's probably going to go down. And then this is the Kavanaugh thing is just the last thing they're going to get out of this is just to get him confirmed. And like, that's another reason why
I
they
feel
could
like
be
they've
through.
Had that feeling, though, for 18 months, and that they are just like people at a casino in one of those like cash grab things with a wind tunnel where they get a minute to like grab right. for 20s, but like they keep adding time to it. And right. they're like, this is insane. There's now just 20s kind of buried in the corner. I've got most of them, but like, I'm obviously not going to stop grabbing the 20s until they let me out. But oh my God, like,
yeah,
they keep giving me time.
And with regard specifically to the Sessions Trump relationship, just a year ago, Lindsey Graham was saying it would be the beginning of the end of Trump's presidency if he fired Sessions. And now he sees that tweet. He sees no one's responding to it. And now he's saying, well, he deserves an attorney general he can trust. So he's just like, we'll let you fire him after Kavanaugh gets approved.
I don't know what's going on with Lindsey.
And apparently Lindsey Graham was on some show yesterday saying, sort of laying out a more detailed groundwork for the firing of Sessions, saying that he bungled the family separation story. So,
oh, I love that. They don't give a fuck, but then they're like, let's just pin it on that guy.
Right, right.
We'll do it. We like the idea of the child separation, but then let's just act like we don't. Right. And then Jeff Sessions.
From a PR standpoint, it wasn't handled as well as it should have been.
Right. They're summer camps, though. As they were saying on Fox. So.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And so there's a story in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago about how Qatar is seeking to influence American policy now. And basically they've realized that because we don't have a process-driven institution running the country, and instead we just have like a cult of personality, like one addled megalomaniac, that like they just need to get to people around him. So they've spent $13 million lobbying people who they know just like hang out with him, lobbying people at Mar-a-Lago, putting op-ed pieces where he might see them. It's basically the equivalent of putting billboards up in his eye line, like that you know, or he might see, because it's just because
that's how predictable this whole
yeah,
thing
it's
is.
Just like he's the guy, and this is a corrupt authoritarian style government, so we just need to like get in front of him somehow. And so they paid for Alan Dershowitz, who has no like official role other than like dude Trump talks to a lot.
Right. And the guy who just makes up cool legal theories to be like, oh, no, he's cool. He's
cool. Yeah, yeah. They flew him to Qatar and he wrote a positive op-ed about them in The Hill, and then was like, when it was discovered that this was all part of a lobbying effort, he was like, if I had known that they were doing this because they thought I would influence the president, I would not have gone.
Okay.
But it's just like, yo,
Yeah, because the Qatari Board of Tourism really needed the Alan Dershowitz fucking seal of approval to get people to, what the fuck is he thinking?
Well, he can't hang out in Martha's Vineyard anymore, so he was like, what's another cool place I can spend summers? Qatar.
Right. Will they be cool with me? Yeah.
I guess Doha is the new Martha's Vineyard.
That's what they say. Mike Huckabee is also one of his friends that they're trying to influence.
Cool friends.
Yes.
It's, yeah.
Funny but, dude. Funny
I mean, because they were also, you know, flirting with the idea of floating Jared some money to handle his debts, too. So right. You've seen how Qatar has kind of entered the picture here and there to try and get some influence. But, man, that's just so, like, I guess the game is so elementary that, you know, the tactics here are just like, dude, just get to him through his friends.
Right.
It's like how, like, I think any person starting out trying to figure out how to infiltrate something is like, I guess I can get through their friends. Like, if you're like a SoundCloud rapper and you're trying to get your fucking mixtape heard, you're like, well, who does Dre hang out with? Okay, right. I'm going to hang outside the Apple Music offices and I'm going to offer every person out there $50 to take my mixtape, just to take it. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of, the logic is very simple here.
It's like taking a catering job at like a studio head's daughter's. Like bat mitzvah and like sliding a script under the toilet or whatever. you know, I do drive by this billboard kind of often that just has a picture of a dude with a hat on and it just says at Chaz Fusion and it says like, I will entertain you. And like, I keep, at first I was like, who is that? This is so funny to buy a billboard. Like, it's such a tall billboard and it's in a strange neighborhood that doesn't have a lot of billboards. And then I was like, I'm kind of interested. Who is Chaz Fusion?
Who is
like,
Chaz Fusion?
It seems like he could entertain me, you know?
And who
got my attention, Chaz?
Did you find out? Oh man, we're giving him all this free press.
Yeah, I know. I might be misremembering the handle, so don't worry. He'll have to pay me. I'm trying to sign him, basically. Yeah. 28% is standard.
So, Miles, India has made a huge step.
Huge move. Huge win.
Yeah.
Yes, they finally basically did away with a colonial era law that criminalized same-sex relations and deemed it unconstitutional. And Section 377 was basically, it was one of the first colonial sodomy laws that was included in a post-colonial penal code. And then basically a lot of other countries like in Asia and Africa, they kind of followed suit of like that same model of law. So this not only has like reverberations for India, but could have effects across the world, because I think a lot of the times, you know, people were looking at homosexuality and things like that. And like gender nonconformity is like a foreign idea, like that's something from the West or whatever.
Right.
And now that this has been codified in their laws, they're no longer, you can target sexual minorities and that is a crime. It is illegitimate. So that is a very big step forward for LGBTQ people, not just in India, but many countries. So yeah, as Slate puts it, it basically dismantles the argument that LGBTQ people and rights are, quote, foreign. And if India can move past its colonial legacy and treat its LGBTQ citizens with respect and dignity, why not other countries? And so true that. So, yeah, really nice to see that happening. The world is progressing in some places.
India's
still.
Supreme Court.
Yeah. So who would have known?
Turns out that's an important job, I guess.
I guess. I mean, they must get it.
We'll see. Whatever. So finally, there's been sort of a piece of common accepted wisdom that if a Starbucks shows up in your neighborhood, that's the sign that gentrification is coming for you.
Yeah.
But people have gotten more sophisticated about how to figure out if gentrification is coming for you. And it's actually the app or the website Yelp is the best way to track this.
You know, before I think everyone has seen like, oh, there's a Starbucks, here it comes. Or you just knew that was like this seal of approval. Like, okay, now this place is about a bunch of hipsters or wealthy white people about to move in.
Right.
But now a lot of Harvard economists and people over at the Harvard Business School, they're saying like Yelp is way better because it's like a constantly updated data set that isn't like government statistics that people normally use, because you can see, oh, there's a new business. What's the business? What are the reviews? Are they complaining about the price? Do people like it? Things like that. And they found
that you can follow that, or yeah.
No, go ahead.
That you can follow the differing communities like having disagreements on new businesses being like some.
Not necessarily like what they believe, but just the fact that in a moment you can find what the new businesses are in general. Or if people are saying it's too expensive or whatever. Yeah, but I guess.
Does Yelp allow you to like have that data? If you could somehow plug in to the API, like show me every.
I don't know.
Business that's opened in this radius or something
I'm
like
sure,
that.
Or something they figured out to just be like, oh, what was the sequence of businesses entering this specific zip code or whatever, and then they can put that next to property value information and see what happens.
I mean, if they're smart, that's how they're making all their money, is just selling that to Harvard Business School or whoever the fuck wants it.
They track on Yelp the percentage of laptops and coffee shops that are Acer and Toshiba, and as those decrease, you know the neighborhood is changing.
Exactly. But they say, like, first with the Starbucks, it predicted an extra 0.54% rise in local home prices, but they found that that's true of all cafes. But then they found other businesses that actually show even greater increases in home prices, and that's predictably wine bars, florists, convenience stores, and barbers. At the top is laundromats, but even the researchers were like, disregard that, because we looked at a lot of New York City stuff, and obviously laundromats are constantly going up, so that's not necessarily the best indicator. But yeah, barbers, convenience stores, florists, wine bars let you know, you know, if the values are going to go.
It's crazy to me that laundromats, especially in New York, can and do stay in business. Like, it's so much real estate for like a business that is quarter based.
Right.
You know, like, it's a lot of square footage for, like, I've never would see more than 10 people or whatever, you know, paying $2
an
hour.
Always.
So much, you know. Anyway, I don't have anything to bag. Just curious that laundromats,
the margins are razor thin.
Yeah.
And
it's just profitable enough.
There's that expose on...
They do it for the love of the laundry.
There's that expose on nail salons in New York City where they were like, oh, these women are being treated like human, like slaves, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, they're treated, paid nothing, and like just really treated like shit. And that makes sense, because nail salons in New York are like one of the just insanely good prices for stuff that anywhere else it costs... You know, like $40 for it costs like $5 in New York, and everyone's like, "Wait, how's this possible?" And somebody actually followed through on their
Sarah,
like,
Maslin-Neer, talented writer. I feel like anytime you have a question, how can this be so cheap?
It tracks to a pretty
logical answer at the end of that road.
Yeah, shit.
Wait, with like laundromats though, what?
No, I was just saying, shit, that sucks. Oh. That's true.
Workers that sleep like in piles in houses somewhere.
Yeah, it's true with iPhones. It's true with electronics today are like so much cheaper.
Or Lyft or any of, like any of these things. It's just like, oh, it's only going to cost me, it's $9 to spend an hour and 10 minutes in traffic.
You've both lived in New York City.
Yes.
Has there been a time when you're like, God damn it, I wish there was a laundromat closer, and then one popped up and you're like, thank fucking God. Like, is it like, is that the situation with, I mean, because I know, you know, most people I know in New York don't have laundry in their unit or building, so they rely on laundromats. But is that like a thing that is constantly like being like, when is that going to be?
In my neighborhood in Brooklyn, the laundromats were like the oldest businesses in the neighborhood. That's why I was interested by you saying like them opening. I mean, perhaps in like a neighborhood that doesn't have store. I never lived in a neighborhood that was like barren and became not barren.
Right.
But even in like, you know, less affluent neighborhoods I was in, it was like the oldest things. I watched other stuff open, but like laundromat was like
the constant.
Yeah. Was day one.
Yeah.
And that makes sense why they probably just like, don't ignore that. Like, laundromats just come and go because that's just the nature of the game.
Right.
New York.
But then there was that delivery laundry services became very big while I was in New York.
Was that like Washio and stuff like that? Because my local laundromat would like deliver your laundry to you years and years ago.
This was a very inefficient service where they just, you could like, you know, on demand a driver to pick it up. But then it became clear like, oh, you're just taking these to like other laundromats, doing them and bringing them back.
Yeah.
Like, you're just somehow
marking it up.
And but like putting a fancy logo on the bag and giving you an app that says, oh, I want it delivered at, you know, this time and all this stuff. And like,
but they gave me
did they do your laundry by the pound?
I believe they did.
Yeah. Don't most places do it by
the pound? Yeah, laundromats.
Do they all do it by the pound?
Yeah, when I did Fluff and Folder, though, I would just weigh it. And I remember the first time I was like, damn, okay.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, when I was like on the road this last year, like sometimes would be somewhere and be like, well, I have to do laundry. There's same day at a laundromat, but I don't have time to like wait there.
Right.
And they'd be like, oh, we can't do it. You only have 4 pounds of laundry. We have a 10-pound minimum. And I'd be like, well, how much is 10 pounds? And they'd be like, it's $3. You know, it's okay.
I'll pay the $3.
Here's a $5.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, money bags, Max.
Yeah, you were on tour for a while. Were any particular places, parts of these United States that you particularly liked or disliked?
I mean, it was all very nice. We played a lot of fun city. Like, there's a certain, like, not like, oh, Chicago, New York, L.A., like
a lot of cities like Cincinnati and Cleveland and Louisville and Memphis all have like kind of old, beautiful historic theaters that as the city is sort of civically and business-wise bounced back after perhaps a lower post-industrialization period. They're now like all renovated and fun, and it's like really cool going to these theaters that some of them maybe they've only been open for, you know, 20 years, but then they're like 100 years ago, this was the biggest movie theater in all of, you know, Louisiana and had all this history. It was just really, really cool seeing cities that way.
There's a lot of cool cities in the middle of
Louisville
the country.
Was awesome. Louisville's Memphis awesome. Was fantastic.
Yeah.
Memphis had a haunted bar that I went to.
Really?
I don't know how you measure this, but if you Google most haunted bar in America, this one in Memphis comes up. Oh, yeah. It's like every ghost hunter is like, oh, it's off the ghost charts or whatever. But they have like, it's a dive bar on the first floor, and then the second floor is just like these weird creepy horror movie rooms, not in like a stage managed way, just being like, this used to be a bordello, there's bad vibes up there, we keep red light bulbs go up, and it's like, no, this is genuinely eerie. Yeah
It'd be funny if they're just blaming food poisoning on ghosts. It's like, oh no, Tom, sorry, but it's haunted. The ice, I think they're shitting in the ice or something, these ghosts.
The ghosts really are definitely haunting the nacho cheese or whatever that we serve.
Max, it's been great having you, man. Where can people find you, follow you, see you?
I'm at Max Silvestri, S-I-L-V-E-S-T-R-I on social media. And also, the Comedy Lineup Part 2, my episode is up now on Netflix.com.
Awesome. There we go.
Thanks for having
Netflix.com,
me.
Netflix.com, eh?
Yeah. Only don't watch it on your device, please. Okay. Only watch it on the website, on your laptop, not maximized, in a small window.
Is there a tweet you've enjoyed of late?
You know, you asked me about that, and I was like, well, I haven't enjoyed Twitter in, 9 months. But one of he's a friend and comedy writer. I love him, Noah Garfinkel. He's very smart about politics, but also I feel like he's very silly. And just he tweeted this week, Woodward and Birdseed? ? And I was like, that is what Twitter should be for. Anything else, I don't need to hear. So Woodward and Birdseed.
There you go. Miles.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
And what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
This is from Reductress. I just love their fucking headlines. Woman still clinging to time boyfriend made spaghetti 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Because my goodness, if you've been in an immature relationship, and I've been an immature man in a relationship where you point back, you're like, what about that thing I did 6 months ago?
You know,
that's a very real way that I've tried to rationalize my lack of engagement in a relationship. But I've learned.
A tweet that Super Producer Anna Hosnier just shared with us from Dan Sinker that I've been enjoying is, fix the title, and then they changed the title of the op-ed on the New York Times. They banned Muslims and locked children in cages, and I was cool with it, so I stayed quiet. But when I realized my shit talk to Bob Woodward was about to fuck me, I wrote this sternly worded op-ed.
Oh boy.
I thought it was well done.
I wonder when that's going to happen. And if they're, what the person does when it comes out who op-ed is.
I know.
Like, see, I was a hero. And he'd be like, yo, bruh, you're out here saying some dumb shit on mic.
Right. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. You can also find the footnotes in the information about the episode on whatever device you're listening to this on. Miles, what song are we writing
on? Oh my God, with the op-ed and just all the intrigue and all the Woodward fear, everything is just...
The Woodward of it all.
The Woodward of it all, man. I just know that Trump is out here being like, oh, these people are treasonous, and I know he should be bumping this track by the OJs. Backstabbers, because they smiling in your face, and all the time, they want to take your place, because they're backstabbers. So, you know, be strong, man, because your time is probably coming. But yeah, this is OJ's Backstabbers.
All right, so enjoy that one, Mr. Trump, and the rest of you. We're going to ride into the weekend on that. We will be back next week with season 48. Talk to you guys then. Bye.
Bye.